How do you assemble a lifetime of memories from traveling the world? Well, when you're a writer as celebrated as Paul Theroux, you just keep on writing. We figured we'd celebrate the 20th anniversary of our radio show by inviting Paul on the show as he celebrates his 84th birthday, as he's just published a new collection of short stories under the title The Vanishing Point. Paul joins us from his home on the north shore of Oahu to look at how his travels and adventures over the decades have introduced him to characters and situations that can remind us how an imagination and the written word can shine a powerful light on our lives. Paul, welcome back to Travel with Rick Steves.
Aloha from Hawaii, Rick.
Aloha, and congratulations on your latest book, this collection of stories. It's called The Vanishing Point, and it coincides, basically, with your 84th birthday. So, happy birthday, and when I think that you're 84 years old now, I'm looking at my next 15 years until I get to be 84. Now, like you, I've found my niche. I love what I do, but I don't know what's ahead. You've been there. What should I look forward to as a writer in the next 15 years?
Well, first, keep doing what you're doing, because there's no point in stopping it if you're good at it or if you like doing it. If it gives you pleasure, it gives you enjoyment, other people enjoyment, don't stop. Don't stop. Don't take up golf, or pickleball. Just keep reading, traveling, writing, and doing what you're doing, and you'll be happy. You'll be as happy as you are now.
You know, I've thought about this term pastimes. A lot of people, when they get older, they have pastimes. And, you know, when you get older, we realize we only have so many years left that we can at least be functional at what we enjoy doing. And in a case like you or me, we have all the money we need. I imagine there are things you'd still like to experience and do that have nothing to do with writing another book, yet you keep on working. There's a cost to that. You don't get to do those other activities that might be lurking in the back of your creative spirit, but you write, and that takes a lot of your bandwidth. Why is that?
But that's not entirely true. Here's the point. I work in the morning at home, and in the afternoon, I always go to the beach. I have a folding chair, and I take my work with me. I sit at the beach uninterrupted, and I write on my clipboard 200 or 300 words, a page or two, and then I go swimming. I have an outrigger canoe. There's three Hawaiian guys that I go paddling with. So my writing life is bound up with sunshine, swimming, and paddling a canoe.
So that's you've got yourself a routine that sustains you. It sounds like a lot like Picasso's work schedule. And
does it?
He would work famously in the morning really hard, and then he'd put it down and he'd have the afternoon and the evening to socialize and do other, you know, fun things that stoked his spirit.
I don't socialize much. I'm not antisocial, but I don't know any writers here, and I don't know many readers either. So, and as far as the age goes, I mean, you mentioned my age, which is a very daunting figure, but think about Bob Dylan still strumming his guitar.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Mick Jagger is coming up. He's 80-something, and he's still rock and rolling. Martha Stewart's my age, you know. And so it's not a question of age. It's you've got to keep moving, stay positive, keep working, and you get better at it. You know, I mean, there's something called the older style. I mean, your style of travel changes. Your style of writing changes. You mentioned Picasso. Picasso was doing completely different work in his old age from what he did as a youth. And I think that that's a discovery that you make as you age, which is you look at things differently. People look at you differently. The world is different. There's not a lot of new things in the world. People tell you, hey, guess what? And you say, and they tell you something, so, well, I remember that from 1968. You know, if you say that, you're a phony.
Right.
But actually, you see a kind of repetition in the world, repetition of dictatorships, repetition of stupidity, repetition of innovation, and all of that you've seen. I mean, not that there's nothing new under the sun, but you have a perspective that, you know, apropos of the vanishing point, you suddenly have arrived at the vanishing point. What something that you thought was a full stop, something you couldn't see ahead, you've arrived at that point and you have a point of view, you have a perspective on it. You thought, I didn't realize I would get to where I am now. And that's a revelation and an enlightenment.
Paul Theroux is our guest from his home base on Oahu's North Shore right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Paul's been called a master of the short story and has written some 60 novels, short stories, and works of nonfiction. Global travels and identities tied to a sense of place play a key role in many of his works. His latest collection of stories is called The Vanishing Point. His website is paultheroux.com. Paul, your book is called The Vanishing Point, and you defined it a bit a moment ago, but let's talk about this because it is such a great title for this collection of short stories. It's about 300 pages, each story is about 20 pages long, and you have this overarching concept of the vanishing point. In art, we kind of know what that means. What does that mean as you tie this collection of stories together?
What it means to me is extinction, the sense of mortality. At my age, I think of that a lot. I think of, there's a nice word we have in English called finitude, finality. So I feel my age at times, but also I wanted to depict it. I wanted to depict the lives of older people or the lives of people who see that their lives are diminishing. And the title story is, I have a guy in Maine. He works for a painter that doesn't do vanishing point. The painter does kind of color field painting. But he sees a calendar, a man standing by a railway track, and he sees the railway track, the vanishing point of the track in the future. And he thinks, what's there? Is it a full stop? What's beyond the vanishing point? At the end of the story, I won't spoil it. No trigger warnings or anything like that. But I say that he discovers what's there. And the other stories similarly. So as you get older, you begin to care about different things. You see different things. You have a vantage point that you lack when you're younger. And you have it as a traveler too. When you go to a place, I think an older person has a different reaction to places than a younger person. And these are in the stories too.
You know, Paul, you were a kid once. I was a kid once. Now, 40, 50, 60 years later, we're the old guys. And the kids today, they're going to be old guys and old gals someday soon. What's your advice from your vantage point to young people who are very headstrong about how the world is?
I remember being young. I remember very distinctly because I felt that I lived in a web of obscurity. I felt beneath notice. I thought, how do you ever manage to accomplish anything in this world? How do you become a worker? How do you graduate from college? How do you pay your taxes? The world was such a mystery to me. I was living outside Boston, Massachusetts. You know, one of my classmates who was similarly bewildered about what's going to happened to be Michael Bloomberg, who ended up with $85 billion. And anyway, we were in the Boy Scouts together, and I can say that we didn't have a clue.
Right.
And my advice, I don't have a lot of advice. My advice would be, listen, don't take anything for granted. And I was fortunate to grow up in a very large, slightly dysfunctional family. There were 7 children. I had 6 siblings, which taught me the virtue of negotiating. So if there's a cookie on the plate, you never snatch it. You never, because you'll make a lot of enemies if you do. And you make sure that no one wants it, and then you take it. And that helps in travel. So growing up in a big family helped me when I traveled because it made me a listener. It made me a negotiator. And it made me take nothing for granted. And it's not that I fit in, but I was more patient and I was more a negotiator.
You know, your stories are just so empowered by the characters that you develop. And to me, your passion for having good characters in your writing is similar to my understanding that's the essence of good travel. I always like to say meeting people is what sort of carbonates the experience. Talk about the importance of characters in your travels and in your writings. I mean, you love being on a train. What a great place to bump into characters, right?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I would say first, another piece of advice I might even give is leave home. I mean, you don't really know the world at all if you just stay at home. The writer who travels, the writer who leaves home, gets away, meets other people, tests themselves against other people, gets to know people, learns other cultures, learns another language. Not a great deal happened to me until I was 21, 22. Then I went to Africa. I joined the Peace Corps. My advice might be become a volunteer. Go somewhere. Be a teacher. Don't just travel to a place. Work in the place. So I wasn't sure what was going to happen to me until age 22. I was in the Peace Corps. I was in Malawi, Central Africa. It was actually called Nyasaland then. It was a British colony. And I realized this is a new world. It was completely unexpected. I learned the language.
Hmm.
I made friends. I wasn't earning much money, but for 2 years as a Peace Corps teacher, I discovered what it was that I wanted to do. I wanted to be a writer. I had thought I was going to be a doctor. And then I realized, no, suddenly I realized there's a big world, there's something to write about. And that was a very, very important moment for me. And it wouldn't have happened if I'd stayed home.
You know, I find that is so fundamental what you're saying. And when I think back on my story, if I didn't go to places that were out of my comfort zone, if I didn't have the gumption to complicate my life by getting out of my norm, I would not have the dimension that I have to draw from in my writing. I remember when my dad took me to the airport when I was a kid to go down to the troubled action in Central America. Rather than saying, have a good trip, he said, don't be duped. He was afraid I was going to get out of my norms.
Yeah.
And now when people say have a safe trip, I almost think they're saying that. Don't be duped. You might see the world as more complicated than you thought it was.
When I told my father I was going to Africa, he said, that's great. I said, I'm going to be in Africa for 2 years. In the end, it was 6 years. And he said, that's great. And he said, write to me. I mean, what power? He didn't say, oh, it's dangerous. And it was dangerous. 1963,
yeah.
There was coups, there were revolutions, the country's becoming independent. The Congo was a horror. He said, great, great.
Yeah.
Paul Theroux has been called a dean of travel literature with his prolific output of stories, novels, and writings that explore the human psyche in settings all around the world. He's celebrating his 84th birthday with us right now on this, our 20th anniversary edition of Travel with Rick Steves. Paul's recently released a collection of stories called The Vanishing Point. It's the latest in the more than 60 works he's written with stories that take place in Hawaii, New England, and Africa. All locations Paul has lived in and gotten to know really well. You know, Paul, everybody in travel writing seems to throw around these great famous quotes from other famous writers and so on. Mark Twain, you know, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, narrow-minded, and so on. I've got two favorites. One is from Mohammed, and he said, don't tell me how educated you are, tell me how much you've traveled. And another one I like to throw around is from Thomas Jefferson. And to be honest, I don't even know how true it is, but I've got this sense that Thomas Jefferson said, travel makes a person wiser, if less happy. And those are very wise to me.
It makes you, well, experience does make you wise. It also gives you information. So suddenly you have data, you have experience. Your brain is expanded by that, and you're not getting it from the internet. Let me quote Mao Zedong.
Okay.
He said, real knowledge arises from direct experience. The only real knowledge arises from direct experience. In other words, you learn by doing. You don't get it on the internet. You don't even necessarily get it from a book. You don't get it from someone that's telling you. You get it from direct experience.
Mm-hmm.
Suffering, travel, work. You can have any opinion you want about Mao Zedong, but direct experience was what I lacked. I was home, sitting on my sofa, watching TV or reading a book. Suddenly, when I left the house, when I got out of the house, I had direct experience. And that's what travel offers you. Also, so in my book, The Vanishing Point, all of those stories arise from experience that I've had, either stories that people told me,
yeah,
or places that I've been. So they're set in a lot of different countries. The book wouldn't exist if I had stayed home, or it would exist maybe, but in a totally different, less interesting form.
So, Paul, we've been talking about leaving. You're quite comfortable, it seems now, with your world on the North Shore of Oahu. How is the people scene there to your liking? Because it's not an intellectual kind of crowd, is it?
No, you would come to Hawaii to discuss the lyricism of Henry James' Late Manner or Shakespeare's Measure for Measure, that we do have an opera here and so forth. But you might, you know, people live their lives here. They work, and they're constantly in contact with other people. So we have 10 million tourists a year here. So local people have to cope with the influx of 10 million tourists, and they need to negotiate that. I find Hawaiians here, the ones I paddle my canoe with, I love their company. They're working men, actually, and women, that's a lot more interesting than, I don't know, than maybe discussing Shakespeare to a certain extent. And they live lives that are totally unlike mine. Their worries are different from mine. They worry, you know, they have young families and so forth. They're all younger people, actually. And it's great to associate with younger people. I love being with them.
We tend, if we're not mindful of this, we tend to gravitate toward people who see things the way we do and think as we do. And it makes us, it takes the swizzle stick out of our drink, I think. And it's a problem.
That's true. But also, you know, there's another aspect. You live your life very similar to mine. Your passport is full of stamps and has a lot of pages. So is mine. So I'm not here 12 months of the year nonstop.
Right.
While living here, I've written numerous travel. I wrote The Pillars of Hercules, Traveling the Mediterranean. I wrote Riding Iron Rooster about China.
Yeah.
I wrote my book Deep South, riding my car around Mississippi and Alabama. So I live in Hawaii, but I'm not here all the time. I was there when I lived in England. I was constantly traveling. You know, there's a great line in D.H. Lawrence's book, Sea in Sardinia. He says, comes over one the need to move. Comes over one the need to move.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Paul Theroux, and his book is The Vanishing Point. You know, Paul, as a traveler, it's curious to me, people are fascinated by which corners of the world are, quote, the most content. Have you seen these most content countries lists, and what's your take on that from your experience?
I don't think there are any content countries, but there are a lot of corners of countries or communities that are content, that really are content.
And what do they have in common?
What they have is deep roots, usually, in a culture. Mm-hmm. They have deep roots. They have traditions that sustain them. They have humility. They usually have great respect for ancestors and for older people. Hmm. And it's usually reciprocated. So you find it content that way because they're whole cultures, they're complete. And that's where the contentment comes from, that they live in a space that's safe, that's thriving. They may not be wealthy, but wealth has nothing to do with money. Wealth is a state of mind of having enough, the economy of enough. They have enough. They don't want more.
Paul Theroux, thank you so much for sharing a lifetime of wisdom gained through travel, through meeting people, and through organizing those thoughts in your many books. Congratulations on your latest book, The Vanishing Point, and happy birthday.
Thank you, Rick.
Fill 'em up, fill 'em up, fill 'em up, it is my birthday. Fill 'em up, fill 'em up, fill 'em up, it is my birthday.
You can listen to Paul Theroux's previous conversations with us from the web links we provide with this week's show. That's at ricksteves.com/radio. Up next, let's revisit a great conversation we had a couple years ago with Martin Sheen. He'll tell us how his travels have inspired his work as an actor and enlightened his activism for social justice causes. And we'll toast this 20th anniversary edition of Travel with Rick Steves, recalling how it all started right out of high school back in the summer of '73.